In the family, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits.
Hello, I'm Father William Pearsall, and I'm a Jesuit priest, and I work in London as a parish priest in one of our parishes. And I'd like to say a little bit about the Society of Jesus, which has been my family for 30 years plus now. And it's the religious order to which I belong, and it is the community that supports and sustains my life as a Christian missioned to serve the Church. Well, the Society of Jesus is the order, but it's generally the members are known as Jesuits. And the name Jesuit was originally a kind of nickname, not necessarily a complimentary one, of people who call themselves members of this society or company of Jesus. They were Jesuites, people who were always talking about Jesus, but who may also have been a little bit puffed up in doing so. And so it was a term used partly by the enemies, but gradually became a term that is a term of affection for those who see in the word the very call itself to follow Jesus, to know him, and to be involved in his work on earth. And this is the call of a Jesuit. And it first came to the founder, St. Ignatius of Loyola, in this particular way. St. Ignatius, born at the end of the 1400s, lived the first part of the Reformation era, and not initially involved in Reformation issues, became a part, nevertheless, of this new reformation of the Church, because in his life, the way that Jesus came to him reformed him so much that he wanted to share that experience with others. And he began as a soldier and, wounded in battle, was sent to the family castle in northern Spain, in the Basque country, to convalesce, and it was during this convalescence that he felt the motions of the Spirit within him, and he discovered the gift of discerning the spirits, so that he could find God's will. And it was God's will that he should be a soldier of Christ. And so he formed around him a band, not of soldiers, but of scholars to start with, because it was at the University of Paris that the idea finally coalesced, that from his experience as a pilgrim, learning to pray, learning to find God, that from this experience, from the spiritual exercises that came out of the experience, a new movement could be born that would serve the Church and help souls. And this was his great desire, to help souls. He saw people in that way, children of God, needing to always be in a good relationship with God and to be helped by one another into that relationship. So, at Paris, where he trained to become a priest, he gathered around him a group who took vows, and from this initial impetus, submitting themselves to the Pope, Pope Paul III, came a new order of life in the Church in the year 1540. The Society of Jesus was approved. And straight away, as Ignatius settled in Rome to be the first Father General of the order, straight away came the direction in which the Society was going to move in the subsequent centuries. And they got a church in the heart of Rome. It's still there. And gradually, wherever they went, they would find a church or a chapel and make it a part of the center of their apostolic work, based on the word and the sacraments, to help souls. Initially, they hadn't intended to go into education, but it came very quickly. Their work in training their own members was so good, people asked to join in and to benefit from their educational system. And by the time Ignatius himself was in heaven, the schools of the Jesuits were already famous, and they became increasingly famous until to now they are a part of our great work of educating people to be followers of Christ and educating people for service all over the world. And along with the education came the missions from the very beginning. Ignatius himself lived at a time when new lands were being discovered all over the globe. And in the following centuries, the Jesuits went wherever they could find transport. They went to South America, to Canada, China, Japan, India, the Philippines, everywhere. And wherever they went, they brought the message of Christ. That was the evangelizing aspect of the Society of Jesus, and it continues to this day. And we have missions all over the world, and these missions become the center of living communities of faith. And as we try and bring people to the faith, we realize that in certain circumstances we're not allowed to make converts. But we still want to be there, and to be there to help men and women to find their place in the life of the Spirit within them, to be God's children, and so we continue the work of helping souls. From the very beginning, the Society of Jesus has always been involved in the world, engaged with the culture around it, and has indeed contributed to that culture through the drama, through art, through music, through literature, poetry. Jesuits have been happy to use the language of the age they live in, and the techniques and the technologies, indeed, right until modern times, so that the gospel can be better known, more widely known. And this impetus to spread, to grow, and to expand is not out of pride for the work of the Jesuits themselves, but really because this is the way of making fruitful that gospel, which was first planted in the Holy Land at the time of Christ with only 12 apostles. So St. Ignatius and his spirit continues with the idea that wherever there is more fruit for the kingdom of God, that's where we should be. At the same time, working on the margins where others don't go. So over the years, we have been involved in education and missions and retreats and scholarship, but we also have been pioneers in areas of social justice, confronting the powers that be, the established powers, on behalf of the poor. And always from the very beginning, the order has stressed its closeness to the poor. Without that, then we have no place in the world. We can't influence the influential in our schools and our prestigious works unless we're also working side by side with the little ones of this earth. And so wherever you find Jesuits, you will also find their engagement with the poor. We have striven to be, over the years, contemplatives in action, that is, men called to pray and to be united with Christ in prayer, but also to work out that union in action, in apostolic work, and the order is primarily an apostolic order. The three vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience are always seen in terms of service to the Church in its apostolic mission to save souls and to bring men and women closer to God. The history of the order is a bit bumpy. It went through a period of actually being suppressed for political reasons. But its work speaks for itself, one would hope, in spite of the dark passages in the past that seem to have been associated with Jesuit intrigue. What most people experience when they come close to working with the order is openness and a desire to collaborate in every way, to share in every way the great riches of grace which come from this particular charism. Many saints and many martyrs have come from the order, recognized by the Church, and many, many more are known only to God. But whatever the work may be, wherever it may take place, it's always done in the spirit of being friends in the Lord, of finding God in all things, and, above all, of offering everything to the greater glory of God.